All right. Good morning, everyone. So what I'd like to try to focus on a little bit this morning is a little bit about Purim. And we'll tie it into Tehillim a little bit. As always, you have to. We'll quote a pasuk from Tehillim. That'll be our tie in the Meretz Hashem. But to really focus a little bit on understanding some of the deeper meaning of this incredible Yom Tov. So I want to begin actually with a statement of the Zohar. So the Zohar, number one, writes, "V'tamor b'chatzar beis hamelech ha'pinimis." So here the Megillah describes, we'll discuss this in greater detail later on, but perhaps one of the most dramatic episodes in the Megillah, where Esther Hamalka appears uninvited in front of the king. Again, with absolutely no idea what to expect, what's going to happen, but recognizing, really heeding the mussar of Mordechai, that in this moment she must take action, in this moment she must do, and therefore she appears before the king. So the pasuk says, "Vata'amor b'chatzar beis hamelech ha'pinimis," she stood by the courtyard of the king's palace, the inner courtyard. So the Zohar, and the truth is many of the Midrashim understand that the whole encounter of Esther with Ahasuerosh is also a metaphor for Esther's encounter with the Ribbono Shel Olam. In fact, again, the Midrash writes that any time that the Megillah writes hamelech or melech, the king, it is a veiled reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Remember, God's name does not appear explicitly in the Megillah. That's by design. On a very simple level, that's because, remember, who wrote Megillas Esther? Mordechai wrote Megillas Esther. And understand, Mordechai was writing this as a nobleman in Ahasuerus' court. And the story had to be framed in a way that was complementary to Ahasuerus. Because remember, again, this book, this Sefer, this Megillah, was incorporated as part in the annals of history of Paras Umadai. As such, again, it could not be an overtly religious text, because again, it was about Ahasuerus. If it gave all the credit to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or it gave all the credit to Esther HaMalka, to Mordechai HaTzadik, then of course it would undermine. Ahasuerus, we know, is an interesting person. A person who appears at, saying it nicely, a person at first glance who appears to really be an egomaniac, but in fact is someone who suffers from incredible insecurities, and really is someone who suffers from an inferiority complex, and therefore does anything and everything in life to side with people who will build him up. So Haman's on his side, I'll side with Haman. Vashti, Vashti. Esther, Esther, who always wants to be on the winning team with absolutely no solid sense of self. Mordechai realizes, therefore, that he's got to write this Megillah in a way that builds up Ahasuerus. So that's why, again, on a technical level, there's no overt mention of God. And of course, on a spiritual level, that's because the entire Nes of Purim, as opposed to all the other miracles that we celebrate, is what we call a Nes Nistar. It is a hidden miracle. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of course, was pulling the strings because God always pulls the strings. But the strings were being pulled in a very nuanced, almost normative fashion. So therefore, the Zohar says, Esther HaMalka standing by the inner courtyard of the king, Obahon Nasachim Be'enav, she found favor in the king's eyes. Veraza demila uriyasiya liskar bis olam umiyad. Hashem shama, Hashem slocha, kshiva va'aseh al ta'acher. So if you remember again last year, we actually focused on the capital, Mizmor LaDavid Ayelas HaShachar, which again, the Medrash understands is a reference to Esther HaMalka, and a reference to the supplications, the heartfelt tefillos that she said as she was coming before the king. But here the Zohar says something amazing. He says, Purim, why is the Yom Tov called Purim? Now the truth is, this happens to be a good question in general, as to why the Yom Tov is called Purim. Why is it called Purim? But lots. So of course, which is interesting, because as much as we know that Haman, he peeled Pur, he drew lots to decide which day to annihilate the Jewish people, it's interesting, that's an important part of the story, but why does that become the dominant part of the story? That's what's bothering the Zohar. Why are you calling this day Purim? And the Zohar gives an amazing answer. The Zohar says, Al Shem Yom HaKippurim. The Zohar says, do you want to know why Purim is called Purim? Purim is called Purim because it is a day that mirrors Yom Kippur. Now, the truth is, interestingly enough, why is Yom Kippur called Yom Kippur? So, normally we understand this from Lashon of Kapara, a Lashon of Atonement. But the truth is, Yom Kippur also has the poor, also has the lots. What are the lots of Yom Kippur? One of the avodas of Yom Kippur was the Seir La'azazel, Seir La'ashem. The Kohen Gadol drew two lots. In fact, in my last chapter, I saw we learned something amazing, which was when you drive down from Yerushalayim to the Dead Sea, you take road one, the mountain that the Kohen Gadol actually did the Avodah of Yom Kippur is there. You pass by that mountain. They say that they know exactly which mountain it was that the Kohen Gadol would go at. They drew the lots in Yerushalayim. But the Ish Iti, the man who was appointed to take the Seir La'azazel, which was the goat that was taken out to the wilderness and pushed off the cliff, they know which cliff it was, literally outside of Yerushalayim. Absolutely amazing. So, interestingly enough, Purim also has the poor. Purim also has the lots. But the Zohar says that the identity, why do we call this Yom Tov Purim? Because again, the name is taken from Yom HaKippurim. So the question we're going to try to understand today, if I were to ask you to talk about the two most dissimilar days on the Jewish calendar. The two most dissimilar days. Which would be the two most dissimilar days? Purim and Yom Kippur. On a variety of different levels. First of all, there is no more serious day on the Jewish calendar than Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is all about Kovod Rosh. Yom Kippur is all about a seriousness. A simcha, as we'll discuss, but a seriousness. Yom Kippur is a day where we transcend our physicality. We essentially become more angelic than man. Purim is the exact opposite. Purim is the one day where actually tzchok, which we loosely translate as silliness or lightheadedness, may be permitted and is permitted and potentially even encouraged. Purim is a day where there's an incredible emphasis on physicality, and Purim is a day in general where there's a jocular nature attached to the day. But yet the Zohar says, if you want to understand the essence of Purim, the essence of Purim is rooted in Yom Kippur. In fact, the name itself says the Zohar. Why do we call Purim Purim? The Zohar suggests it has nothing to do with the lots of Haman. We call Purim Purim because it's a derivative of the Yom Tov of Yom Kippur. So what we're going to try to analyze today is what does this mean? So if you take a look at number two, so I quote to you from the Sefer last week, this is the Be'er HaChaim, the Lulover Rebbe. So he says the following, he says, Zeicha Ladover Mevi Arad, HaKadosh Baal HaImri Noah, Mijekov, Zichuz HaYayin Aleinu, Ahod Yom HaKippurim Hu Kmo Purim Min HaMikra Dichsiv, Vechiper Aron Al Karbono, Al Karnosav, Achas Bashana, Midam Chatasa Kippurim, Achas Bashana, Yichaper Alav L'Doro Seichem. So here, he quotes something very interesting, which is that the Pasuk by Yom Kippur, the Pasuk by Yom Kippur talks about the idea that Aaron, it's talking about the blood applications of the sacrificial service of Yom Kippur, and the Pasuk goes out of its way to say that Aaron will atone for the people, Aaron the Kohen Gadol will atone for the people, Achas Bashana, once a year. There's only one interesting point, which is, it says once a year twice. The Torah repeats the phrase, Achas Bashana, Achas Bashana. So what does that mean? V'nichpelu pa'amayim tevos Achas Bashana, ki yesh shnei yamim miyuchadim bashana. The Torah is giving us a veiled reference by repeating the phrase Achas Bashana once a year twice. The Torah is giving us a veiled reference to what? That there are two unique days in the Jewish calendar. What are the two unique days? Echadu Yom HaKippurim sheisho midam achatos. V'chein Purim nikreis Achas Bashana. Gam bilo zrikas Adam u'bishnei michaper alav l'doro seichem. So the Be'er HaChaim explains so beautifully that the two Achas Bashana, the two references to once a year are referenced, one is referenced to Purim, or excuse me, Yom Kippur, and one is a reference to Purim. That 2 days on the Jewish calendar are days of forgiveness. What's the difference between them? And this is going to blow your mind. Yom Kippur, you have to do something. Purim, you have to do nothing. Yom Kippur is a day of forgiveness because of the avodah, the spiritual service we do, but Purim is mechaper, Purim atones without any specific avoda, without any type of specific service. Skip down to paragraph B. Ubema hisho yom kippurim lepurim. Bereishis adonai lahak din divar ha-vachadosh rablevi yisal mi berdichev. Hine rabu kimo rabu tameyem. I'm in paragraph C now, hakdoshim. V'yiduim heim lemevinei mada. L'lamdenu shadvarim niskavim gavoyim harde yoser mebinoseinu. So Rablevi Yitzchak gives a very interesting answer. So Rablevi Yitzchak explains that we know that Yom Kippur and Purim are comparable, right? But he gives an interesting idea. He says, but it's beyond our pay grade to understand, right? It's beyond our comprehension. Which, by the way, you'll say to this, is that a cop-out answer? What is that? It's not a cop-out answer. One of the beautiful things in Judaism is that we accept the fact that we don't have to understand everything. I don't have to understand it. So you're going to tell me that that Purim is mechaper, that Purim atones like Yom Kippur, but it's beyond my comprehension? Got it. and I fully accept it. One of the things that we condition ourselves to do as Jews is that we need not have a rational understanding of every single thing. People go through so much pain in life because they think that they need to understand why everything happens, when everything happens, how everything happens. And the truth is, if you try that, it's an exercise in futility. One of the things that we try to cultivate as Torah Jews is the power to accept things for what they are, even if I can't fully comprehend the reasons behind them. So maybe Yitzchak says, you just have to trust me when I tell you that Purim is just as powerful as Yom Kippur. How does it work? Why does it work? That's above our pay grade. But he goes on. The Baruch Haim goes on. He says, "Lamdenu, achatorihi velilmot anutzichem lahavinu lahaska alocha lemaisa b'mashe ishu chazal yomim elu ze elu ze leze." U'bishim rav kodesh rabbi shomishin. So on one hand, you have Rabbi Yitzchak Berdichev, who says that Purim is just as powerful as Yom Kippur in its ability to atone, but it's for reasons beyond our comprehension. The Baruch Haim says that's nice, but we'd like to try to understand it, if at all possible. So listen to this. He quotes Rabbi Saul of Rishin. He says, "Dimei Kippurim, get ready for this. Dimei Kippurim, kaimalan kirabanan, Yom Kippur mechaper leshavim, ve'inu mechaper le'inam shavim." This is machlokes. This is a dispute in the Gemara Maseches Yuma as to whether or not does Yom Kippur automatically atone for everyone, or does one have to do tshuva? So there's an opinion of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, who holds that Yom Kippur is mechaper, Yom Kippur atones. Even if you do absolutely nothing, you sleep the entire day, the day itself is cleansing and cathartic. The rabbis say it's not true. Yom Kippur is powerful, but you have to do something to activate the power of Yom Kippur. It's called tshuva. I have to repent, I have to return, I have to change myself. That, yes?
I'm sorry, I got lost. Rabbi said...
Is it existentially or just in this? Okay, go ahead.
Rabbi said, go back just about 2 seconds.
Tell me what your question is.
Rabbi said what?
There's a dispute between Rabbi and the Rabbanon as to how Yom Kippur atones.
Okay, thank you.
My pleasure. Rebbe says that Yom Kippur atones by itself. You don't have to do anything. The day itself is cleansing and cathartic. The Rabbanon say, no, you have to do tshuva. You have to do tshuva. Fundamental dispute. So the Rabbi Sorla version writes, we hold like Rebbe. The Rambam Paskin is like Rebbe. The Gemara goes like the Rabbanon. Namely, that Yom Kippur is powerful, but you must activate the power of Yom Kippur through your own actions. So the day... But we actually hold a little bit of a hybrid position. We hold that Yom Kippur itself does automatically cleanse certain things, certain what we'll call more minor transgressions. But for bigger things, I have to activate the power of Yom Kippur through my own deeds. But look what he writes. He says, Yom Kippur mechaper l'shav v'fayim, ve'ilu b'purim. Look what Rabbi Sol of Rishin writes. And again, if I was saying this, you could say I'm making it up. But this is the Rishiner. He says, ve'ilu b'purim, yesh mechila uslicha v'chapara, af le'elu she'enam shavim. Paragraph D. A wild statement, says Rabbi Sol of Rishin. Yom Kippur is powerful, but you have to activate the power of Yom Kippur through your own actions. Purim, there's atonement whether you do tshuva or not. Purim cleans the slate automatically, whether I'm a penitent or not. He goes on, Ubir Nechdar Rakadosh, Rabbi Sol Chartkov. So the Rishon's grandson, the Chartkov Rebbe, Rabbi Sol of Chartkov, explains, Minalan de Purim Mechaper Afli Lefthemi She'enu Chozer B'tshuva. How do we know that Purim is Mechaper, that Purim atones even for someone who did not do tshuva? He says, Ki Purim Ksiv Kimu V'Kiblu HaYehudim. Remember, Purim, it says that the Jews upheld and accepted upon themselves, V'Darshu Chazal Kimu Lamala. Masha Kiblu Lamata. So, actually, I'm going to leave out the example that he gives. But just so you understand what's happening over here, so just to follow the progression, we have the Zohar that says that the name Purim comes from Yom Kippur, thereby telling us that the identity of the Yom Tov of Purim is embedded in Yom Kippur. We now have the Be'er HaChaim telling us that there are two Achos Bashanas, there are two once a years that are related, that there are referenced in the Torah. Both of those days have the power of atonement. The first of those days is Yom Kippur, the second of those days is Purim. We now have the Rishoner, his grandson Rabbi Saul of Chartkov, taking it even further, saying, and again, it sounds strange to say, that Purim is even more powerful than Yom Kippur. How so? Because in order to take advantage of the cleansing impact of Yom Kippur, you have to do something. You have to do tshuva. But Purim cleanses the soul of the Jew, even if you do absolutely nothing. So we have to try to understand what is this power of Purim, and again, how does it derive its identity and its profound power from Yom Kippur. So we're going to develop two approaches today. So take a look at number three. Yes. I think the Mashiach should come every day, but I don't know. Take a look at number three. So this first approach, I actually mentioned this a little bit on Shabbos, but I want to spend a little bit more time developing it. So remember, this is from Perek Tes, from chapter 9 in the Megillah. So chapter 9 in the Megillah, this is after the miracle occurred, salvation occurred, and the Pasuk says in number three, Pasuk, Vayichtov Mordechai Sadvarim Ha'ila, Vayishlach Svarim El Kol HaYehudim Asher B'chol Medino Samalach HaKashir Shukrim HaRachobim. So remember again, at this point in time, Mordechai and Esther have decided to make Purim into a Yom Tov. They realize the incredible, miraculous salvation that occurred, and they send out letters to all the different communities, Jewish communities, to observe Purim, some on the 14th of Adar, some on the 15th of Adar. But skip down to Pasuk Chaf Beis 22, the last phrase. Mordechai says, La'asos osam yimei mishteh v'simcha. We have to make these days of mishteh. Literally, mishteh is lashon of drinking. Simcha, celebration. U'mishloach manos ishtarei ehu. We send food packages to one another. U'matanos le'evyonim. And gifts to the poor. And there's a very simple question that one could ask, which is, why is this the way we celebrate? You know, sometimes when you get so used to doing something a certain way, you don't question it. So we know Purim means Mishloach Manos, Matanos Le'Evyonim. So I know that that's par for the course. But take a step back for a second. A incredible miracle occurred. Beautiful miracle occurred. HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved us from Haman, from Achashverosh. Beautiful. And Mordechai says the way we're going to celebrate, I understand Mishteh B'Simcha, Seuda, a meal. I understand. Why a meal? Right, because we're Jewish. I mean, right? That's what we do. That's what we do. We celebrate Shabbos with a meal. We celebrate Yom Tov with a meal. Every single thing we do with the Seudas. I understand that. But why Mishloach Manos? Right? Why Shalach Manos? Why Matanos La'Avionim? Why those things? Mishloach Manos is nice, but why? I mean, why do I have to send you food? You send me food. Matanos La'Avionim, gifts to the poor. Tzedakah, there's mitzvah of tzedakah every single day. There's a mitzvah to give tzedakah whenever somebody approaches me and asks me for help. I have an obligation to give. How much I give is up to me, but I have an obligation to give. We have a mitzvah to give all the time. So what's unique about this day? So there's the famous answer of the Gra. The Vilna Gaon explains that the mitzvot of Purim are there to counter the original claims of Haman. That what did Haman say when he was trying to go ahead and get Haman's acquiescence to annihilate the Jewish people? So what does Haman say? He says, Yeshno am echad mefuzar u'mefurat bein ha'amim. There's a people. And you know what's amazing? They're small, they're persecuted, and they still can't get along. One would have thought that if a people is so small and so persecuted by the nations of the world, they would at least band together. But these Jews, they're always fighting. They're always machlokes. There's always disagreements. What kind of people is that? So the Gra says that every single year on Purim, we go ahead and we show Haman that he was wrong. We show him that he was wrong. Right, we go ahead and we give to one another. We give to one another. We provide mishloach manos to one another. We give matanos le'evyonim. We look out for the poor. We look out for each other. To show Haman, you so missed the mark on Klal Yisrael. You so missed the mark on who we are. But there's a problem. Look at number four. Because the halacha itself is a little bit strange. The halacha says, Chayiv l'shoach l'chaveiro shtei manos bas, or shtei minei ochlim. It's important halacha. One is obligated to go ahead and give his friend two items, bless you, two items of meat, or two items of food. Now it's interesting, people think that mishloach manos has to be two foods of two separate brachos. It doesn't have to be. In fact, the Mishnah Berurah says that that's the custom, to give people two different brachos, but technically speaking, it has to be two significant portions, which is also very important because it should be items that I know it's Erev Purim a little, right? So for that the Shalach Manos is done already. But the idea is it should be two items that are usable for someone's Seuda on Purim. So if I give somebody, you know, a thing of pasta and a cookie mix, that's very nice, but that's not usable for their Seuda. It has to be things that are usable for the Seuda, whether people use it or don't use it, that's a different issue, but it should be something that's usable. So that's why the example the Shulchan Aruch actually gives are two portions of meat. It's interesting, two portions portions of meat or two different types of food. Umishlach manos ishtore ehu. Yesh shtei manos lishach. And I have to give two items to one person. V'chol amar b'lishlach l'rei meshubach. And give to your friends. Give to as many people as you can. Vim einlo. And if, now this, here's the point I want to operate with. Vim einlo, I'll focus on. Let's say I don't have. Nebuch, all, I don't have enough food to be able to share with someone else. So what does the halacha say? Machlif im chadero. I switch meals with my friend. So let's say my neighbor and I were both impoverished. We don't have enough food to be able to have a seuda and also give mishloach manos. So not a problem. I give him my food. He gives me his food. And what? And what? We both satisfy the obligation of mishloach manos. Yes. Oh, beautiful, beautiful idea. Right, Yom Kippur and Tu B'Av as well. Beautiful, beautiful. The girls used to go ahead, when they went out to the vineyards, used to change their clothing, so no one would be able to distinguish between the rich and the poor. Beautiful. So listen to, again, the Shulchan Aruch says, and if you don't have what you need, you go ahead and you switch with the other. Zeh sholeach lezeh se'udaso, v'zeh sholeach lezeh se'udaso, kedei lekayim u'mishloach manos ish l're'ehu. Beautiful halacha, but what's the problem with it? What's the problem? It doesn't make sense. Why doesn't it make sense? If I don't have enough food to be able to give mishloach manos, so what should be the halacha? You don't give. I mean, there's a concept, a very simple concept in halacha called ones rachmona patre, which means if you have extenuating circumstances, you are exempt from the mitzvah. To give a dramatic example, if somebody doesn't have arms, they don't put on tefillin. Again, it's not that they're not in violation. I'm exempt. Someone doesn't have food. So again, if I don't have food to give away, then simply, I remember, this is a rabbinic mitzvah. This is not a biblical mitzvah. The halacha should simply be, again, everybody should give mishloach manos. If you don't have enough to give to someone else, you are exempt. Why does the halacha demand that we swap seudos? There's another issue. Take a look at number 5. And this is a fascinating halacha. Shulchan Aruch writes, "Ein medaktikin b'ma'os purim." This is a very important halacha. You know, normally when it comes to hilchos tzedakah, so if somebody asks you for money, there's an obligation if somebody asks you that you should give however much you want, but you have every right to investigate the person who's asking or the cause that it's being solicited for. In fact, again, responsible giving demands that a person knows who they're giving to and what it's for. That's the halacha. And by the way, you're no less pious if you examine a cause before you give than if you don't. In fact, it's more responsible because tzedakah money, again, is money that you're giving to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, money that you're giving to Klal Yisrael. You should be responsible with it. There's one day where that rule doesn't apply, and that one day is Purim. Shulchan Aruch writes, "Ein medaktikin b'maos Purim." We do not investigate after people who ask for money on Purim. Ela kol mi sheposhet yado litol nosnim lo. Whoever asks for money on Purim, I have to give. Ubimakom shenagu litin af la'ino Yehudi nosnim. And by the way, Shulchan Aruch says this is true even by non-Jews. Then on Purim, again, if non-Jews ask, again, in general, in Hilchos Tzedakah, the Shulchan Aruch writes that one should take care of the Gentile poor in addition to the Jewish poor as well. The Shulchan Aruch writes that Mishum Darkei Shalom, because it doesn't look nice for us as members of society if we only take care of the Jewish poor and not of the Gentile poor. Again, how much... Shulchan Aruch paskins that way in Hilchos Tzedakah in Yeradeya. So again, how much to give? I want to be clear. Shulchan Aruch is not saying that you give equally. It's not what the Shulchan Aruch is saying. There's a priority to the Jewish poor. There's a priority to Jewish causes. But again, as members of society, we have to be concerned with general welfare of humanity, not just of our community. However, again, here the Shulchan Aruch says that whereas the rest of the year I'm permitted to go ahead and investigate someone before I give, not on Purim. Not on Purim, which is wild. So on Purim, somebody shows up, asks me for money, I give them. So what's going on over here? So take a look at number 6. So again, in one of they're all dramatic episodes in the Megillah, but one of the most dramatic episodes is, remember, Mordechai hears about the decree of Haman. And he sends a message to Esther to go ahead and appear before the king and supplicate on behalf of the Jewish people. What's Esther's initial response? No. She doesn't say it like that, but that's essentially what she says. No, I can't go before the king, because everyone knows that if you go before the king without being summoned, what's going to happen? You run the risk of execution. So her initial answer essentially is, I can't go. Mordecai sends another message back, essentially saying is, what are you doing? You think you just became queen by mikra, by happenstance, by coincidence? You think that you just happened to be in one of the most powerful positions in the most powerful empire in the world just because of your good looks or your nice personality? You don't understand that this is hashkachas Hashem, that this is divine providence? So she accepts the Moser. And look what she says. Vatomer Esther la'shiva Mordechai. Such a beautiful pasuk. Leich kinos es kol ha'yehudim. Number 6. Hanenzo b'shushan ha'birov et samu alai. Go and gather all of the Jews. Fast for me. Al toklu v'al tishtu shloshes yamim laila v'yom gamen even arse atzum. U'b'chein avo ala melech asher lo kedas. I'm going to go to the king. So fast for me. Daven for me. And again, we go ahead and we say this. V'chasher avarati, avarati. And as I am lost, I am lost. And in fact, the minhag Yisrael is that we read that phrase, V'chasher avarati, avarati, in the tune of Eicha. V'chasher avarati, avarati. We read in that dirgeful tune. So why? So again, the simple pshat, the simple understanding of the pasuk is that what is Esther Amalka saying? Look, I'm going to die. I'm going to die. Meaning there's a strong possibility that I'm going to go to the king. Remember, Ahasuerus is a very unpredictable individual. You never know what you're going to get. He loved Vashti also. But look what happened to her. He loves Esther. Look what happened to her. And again, you understand that you understand. He's a crazy individual. So simply, on the simple pshat, she says, look, I might really be lost. What the Gemara picks up on is her double lashon, the double wording. Why does she just say, kasha avarati, right? I'll be lost. Or the possibility I'm going to be killed. This is goodbye. Why if the chasher avarati avarati? And the Gemara says something very dramatic. In number 7, the Gemara says, the chasher avarati avarati, why the double wording, as I'm lost, I'm lost? Kishem sha'avadati mi beis abba, the same way that I've been lost from my father's home, kach oved mimcha, so too am I lost from you. Now what does this mean? The Gemara understands the narrative of the Megillah, that although it says, u'mordechai lakacha lo lebas, we read it as Mordechai took Esther in as a daughter, the Gemara says, atzikri lebas ela lebayis. Don't read it as a daughter, rather read it as a home. A home is a Talmudic reference for a wife. The Gemara calls one of the Tanoim, Miyamai lo karasi li ishti ishti. I never called my wife, ela li ishti beisi. I called my wife my home. So the Gemara understands from here something absolutely amazing. That Esther Hamalka says to Mordechai, I'm going to go, but I just want you to understand. Kasher avadati avadati. I've lost so much already. I've lost my people. You know, everyone thinks, oh, Esther's a princess. It's wonderful to be a princess. As long as you get to live in the palace of your choosing, and with the king of your choosing, and with the people of your choosing. Esther was a princess in title, but she was kidnapped in the palace. Kasher avadati Mordechai, I want you to understand, kashem she'avadati mi beis abba. I've lost my family, and I've lost my people, and not a day goes by that I don't feel that pain. And now, when I go to the king willingly, kach oved mimcha. Mordechai, I will be lost to you as well. Because the Gemara goes with the narrative that Esther and Mordechai were married. And up until this point, Esther was still technically permitted to her husband, despite having lived with the king, because one could have understood that it was against her will. By her initiating contact with the king, and that contact potentially leading to intimacy with the king, ultimately Esther says to Mordechai, from this point forward, I will be prohibited to you. So this is the end of us. V'chasher avadati, I've lost so much already, avadati, and I stand to lose more. But perhaps Esther was not saying this in the dirge of Eicha. Esther was saying this as a strong, empowered woman. Esther was saying, Mordechai, I want you to understand what I have sacrificed. And I want you to understand what I stand ready to sacrifice. Not because you're forcing me, not because I have to, but because I understand that what it means to be a Jew is to live a selfless life. What it means to be a Jew is to live a life when you don't just think of yourself or of your own needs, but when you think about not what's best for me, but what's best for my people. It's a declarative statement. V'chasher avadati, I've lost so much, avadati, and I'm willing, if I have to lose more. Because that's what it means to be a Jew. What it means to be a Jew, what it means to be a member of Klal Yisrael, is to have the courage and to have the strength ultimately to be a selfless individual. Do you know why the miracle of Purim happens? Do you know why the miracle of Purim happens? So again, on a simple, of course, the answer is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Ribbono Shel Olam pulls all of the strings. But you know, if when you read the story of the Megillah, remember, God's not in the building. God's not on the stage. He's not present. He's behind the scenes orchestrating everything. But how does the miracle occur? The miracle occurs because, really, the entire miracle, salvation of the Jewish people, and that's not a hyperbole, salvation of the Jewish people occurs because of the selflessness of two people, of Esther Hamalka and Mordechai HaTzadik. Two people that had they decided to go ahead and just simply live for themselves, forget about everyone else, I gotta take care of me. My life is first. Self-preservation. They could have easily done that. Esther could have retreated into the chambers of the palace. Mordechai was very highly regarded and very well respected, and I guarantee you could have bartered with the king to spare his own life. They would have been saved. Maybe their families would have been saved. A couple of friends would have been saved. They could have taken that route, but that's not the story of the Megillah. The story of the Megillah is two people acting in the most heroic, selfless way possible. The Kasher Avadati, Avadati becomes a mantra for the Megillah. Whatever I have to give up, whatever I have to do, however I need to be selfless for the benefit of my people, I'm ready and I'm here. I'm ready to do it. And so when Mordechai and Esther make the Yom Tov of Purim and they institute the celebration of this Yom Tov, the celebration has to mirror the dynamic of the miracle. How did the miracle occur? How did the miracle occur? The miracle occurred because of the selflessness of two individuals. When the Ribbono Shel Olam sees the selflessness of Esther Hamalka, sees the selflessness of Mordechai HaTzadik, I have to imagine the Ribbono Shel Olam says, if they, who are Basar V'dam mortals, are going to do this for their people, then I, the Ribbono Shel Olam, have to spring into action as well. So when Mordechai and Esther create the Yom Tov of Purim, the celebration of the Yom Tov must somehow embody and encapsulate the essence of the Yom Tov. What is the essence of Purim? What is it? What is the take-home message? How do you know if you had a meaningful Purim? So, and don't say if you have a headache the next morning, right? How do you know if you have a meaningful Purim? If I become, over the course of the day, a more selfless individual, that's the avoda of Purim. The entire essence of Purim is to try to go ahead and shake away often the egocentricity that often characterizes our life and try to become selfless people. So what does the halacha say? The halacha says we have to give mishloach manos one to the other. You ever wonder, what's the point of mishloach manos? I have a better idea. You keep your food. I'll keep my food, and we'll call it even, and we'll each have a lot less anxiety leading up to Pesach, right? So what's the idea? Is it that I need your food, you need my food? No, what's Mishloach Manos? Mishloach Manos is, I want to give of myself to you, and you want to give of yourself to me. Mishloach Manos is an expression of Judaic selflessness. It's a willingness to give. My food is mine. I made it. I mean, I didn't make it. My wife made it. But I toiled with this, and I want to take something that I did, and I want to share it with you. And you're going to take something personal that you did, and you're going to share it with me. That's the avodah Purim. So what does the Shulchan Aruch say? If somebody's so poor that they don't have enough extra food to give away as Mishloach Manos, no one on Purim is exempt from selflessness. It doesn't matter how poor you are. On this day of Purim, everyone must exhibit selflessness. So I don't have enough food to be able to give away and have a seudah, no problem. I'll give you my seudah, you'll give me your seudah, and we'll fulfill the mitzvah like this. But that is the essence of Purim. That's the essence of the mitzvah sayom. So what did we say before about matanos levyonim? What's the halacha? In the normal circumstances, someone asks me for something, I have every right to say, okay, I understand, I'm sorry for your difficulties. Can I see your letter? Can I see the documentation? Can I see all of this? Purim, none of that. Purim, again, you're in need. You're in need, and I could help you. No questions asked. I don't have to empty my wallet. I don't have to clean out my savings account. But I'm going to help you in whatever way I feel I can. Why? Because just give me a few more minutes. That's the selflessness of Purim. That's the essence of Purim. And this is the avoda of the day. Purim is all about giving to the other, but not just giving out tzedakah. Becoming selfless individuals. Becoming individuals who put the needs of the collective above our own personal needs. And that is not an easy thing. It's not an easy thing. Because it requires sometimes dramatic changes in lifestyle. It requires dramatic changes in priorities. But that's the job of a Jew. You ever wonder, what separates us? What separates us from the nations of the world? What separates us? So I want to tell you, so people will say it's the way we dress. That's one, in the grand scheme of things, it's an important thing. But it's one small thing. You know what separates us? What's the focus of my life? For the Jew, the focus of my life is the other. The focus of my life is my people. The focus of my life is my call. Hands down. Hands down. And by the way, when I say the other, I don't just mean my children. I don't just mean my parents. I don't just mean my spouse. It's that every child is like my child. And every single parent is like my parent. And every friend is like my friend. That's a Jew. That's a Jew. Ultimately, a Jew is the physical embodiment of selflessness. And the essence of Purim, the miracle came about because of selflessness. And the mitzvos hayom tried to engender, tried to capture that essence. And now we begin to understand the Zohar. Now again, what did the Zohar say? And again, the Berach Chaim. Now we understand why Purim is a derivative of Yom Kippur. Because what is Yom Kippur? Yom Kippur is also a day of selflessness. But it's selflessness for who? For who? For HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yom Kippur is the day that I give myself over to God. Yom Kippur, right? Again, remember what happens on Yom Kippur. So Yom Kippur, again, we don't carry on normal marital relationships. Yom Kippur, again, I don't take care of my physical needs. Yom Kippur is not about me. And it's not about even my relationships with the people who I love and I care very much about. Yom Kippur is a selfless giving over of one's self to the Ribono Shel Olam HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm entering into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Holy of Holies. I'm with you. I'm yours. And the truth is, I always want to be yours. So if Yom Kippur is the day where we selflessly give ourselves over to God, then Purim is the day that we selflessly give ourselves over to one another. They're two sides of the same coin. Both days are marked by an incredible selflessness. Yom Kippur is a day of selfless devotion to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm giving up everything. I'm giving up coffee for you, which is a big thing. I'm giving up my meals. I'm giving up my comfortable shoes. I want to give up everything for you. And what's Purim? Purim is, I want to be Esther HaMalka. I want to be, you know, it always warms my heart when, you know, our youngest just had a costume day. I don't know what the official name is, Beis Yaakov, but, you know, she came in as Esther HaMalka. And they were like, I'm sure there were like 25 other, 500 other Esther HaMalkas. And it's like, the Ribono Shel Olam must look at that. And he must say, look at all the Esther HaMalkas. And they are, if we could just teach our children to really just be Esther HaMalka, not by wearing a dress-up gown, but really by emulating that midah, by being a Mordechai Atzadik, because these people, they represent the best of our people. They represent what it means to be a Jew, to be selfless, to give. And says the Zohar, that's the essence of this day. We have two beautiful days in our calendar. A Yom Kippur, which is a day of selfless devotion to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Purim, which is all about a selfless devotion to the other. But let me share with you one other idea, and then I'll take your questions. So another approach to understanding the Purim Yom Kippur connection. So this is also exceptionally important. So the pasuk says, "Vatavona na'aros Esther b'sarisel, vayagidu lo v'tischalchel hamalka mod v'tishlach begadim nahalbishes Mordechai ulahasir sakom yalav elokibos." So this is number 8. So the pasuk in the Megillah says that what happens? So Esther Hamalka, Esther hears about the decree of Haman, and her servants tell her that Mordechai is sitting by the gate of the king, and he's wearing sackcloth, and he has ashes upon him. So what does Esther do? Esther sends Mordechai clothing. It says here, sends him a change of clothing. In other words, you shouldn't sit in the king's courtyard in sackcloth and ashes. Get dressed. Get dressed. This is a raya that they were married, by the way. So get dressed. Get dressed. You can't look like that outside. So take a look at number 9. So the Rebbe of Lulav says something absolutely amazing. The Be'er HaChaim. He writes very beautifully. Va'af be'ez tzara v'tzuka adifa. I'm in paragraph Aleph. I apologize. The letters are a little bit. Aleph and Be'ez are the right-hand paragraph. Gimel Dal here, the left-hand paragraph. So look what he writes over here. Va'af be'ez tzara v'tzuka adifa midasa. Simcha miyosak. Skip down a little. V'chsiv. V'atishlach begadim lahalbish es Mordechai lahasir kami alav lo kibel. V'tzarech lahavin. Dibevadai lo chash v'ester shechaserim begadim l'mordechai. Paragraph So the Baruch Hu asks a very simple question. Mordechai is very respected. Mordechai is a nobleman already. He's got plenty of clothing. He's got plenty of meaning. He doesn't need the clothing that she's sending to him. So obviously, if Mordechai is going ahead and making a decision not to wear his more noble garments, but to dress in sackcloth, he's making an informed decision. So Esther, instead of going ahead and sending him clothing, what should you do? You should ask him, "My hi, what's going on? What are you doing?" But she doesn't. Instead, she sends him clothing. Listen to this paragraph base. He says, "Umivora tifar Shlomo." So the Tiferet Shlomo is Rav Shlomo of Radomsk, who says, Yisod Gadol Bechovas HaSimcha. Esther HaMalka was teaching us an incredible lesson in the obligation to be happy. Sheberochav Daita Hevina Esther Miyad Shebevada Shama Mordechai Besora Kashu Mora. Esther was a very smart lady. And so she understood that Mordechai obviously heard some traumatic news that had caused him to go ahead and change into sackcloth. Paragraph Gimel. And therefore he took upon himself to fast, in order to potentially tear up the divine decree. Amnam, listen to this, get ready for this phrase. Savra Esther She'ein Zu Haderech HaYishara She'yavar Baha'adam. Said Esther HaMalka, the proper approach to difficulties in life is not to be tzibrachin. It's not to be broken. The proper approach to challenges in life is not to put on sackcloth, put ashes on your head, and sit in the corner and cry. Gam be'ez tzara v'tzuka. Look what Esther HaMalka said. Even in times of difficulty, tzarech lahasir es hasak. You have to remove the sackcloth. Ulis azer b'midas hasimcha. And you have to strengthen yourself with happiness, with simcha in life. The rak paragraph dalet. The rak al yidei simcha. Because, says Esther HaMalka, it's only through simcha that you can navigate and extricate yourself from the difficulties in life. But Mordechai wouldn't listen. Mordechai said, "You're wrong. You're wrong. In difficult times, you sit on the ground, you wear your sackcloth, you put your ashes on, and you cry." In difficult times, you have to go ahead and sit with a broken heart and daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for incredible life bitterness. So listen to this. Says the Be'er HaChaim, this pasuk, where Mordechai is sitting in the courtyard, sackcloth and ashes, Esther sending him clothing. And by the way, you know how the story goes on, right? What happens when Mordechai gets the clothing? What does he do? He refuses it. He says, "No, I don't want it." Says the Rechaim, what's happening over here? So Mordechai feels that in difficult, tragic times, the response of the Jew is brokenness. Be brokenhearted, put on your sackcloth, ashes on your head, and cry. Esther HaMalka says, no, that is never the approach of the Jew. Even in the midst of difficult times, a Jew always has to be besimcha, always has to be happy. So who's right? So look what he writes over here. Amnam HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yichriya Sha'at Tzedekim Esther HaMalka. The Ribono Shel Olam opened Mordechai's eyes to the reality that Esther was right. Ki Nesuva Ha'ashkacha Shahaman Yalbish Es Mordechai Bebigdei Malchus V'yachriz Lafanav Kacha Ye'ase Le'ish Asher HaMelech HaFeitz Bikaro. Because what happens as the story evolves, Mordechai is forced to remove his sackcloth. When is he forced to remove his sackcloth? When the king imposes upon him the reward. And what's the reward? That you have to wear the royal clothing, you have to get a haircut, you have to groom yourself, you have to put yourself together, you have to ride on the king's horse, and the decree. And so says the Be'er HaChaim, that was the sign to Mordechai that he was wrong, And Esther HaMalka was right, that the way that a Jew deals with difficult, tumultuous, tragic circumstances is not to crumple into a ball in the corner wearing sackcloth and ashes on my head and crying uncontrollably. That might be sometimes an initial response to tragic circumstances. But then I pull myself together and I recognize I have to be besimcha in all circumstances. Look how he ends. Va'al yidei zeh, hispogegah hamarirus. So look at what happens. Says the Baruch Chaim, you know something amazing happened, which was that when Mordechai was forced to change out of the sackcloth, and he put on the royal garments, and he was being led around on the king's horse, something amazing happened. The bitterness and sadness dissipated from him. V'nigram lo lismoach ba'aschalta digeula. And for the first time he saw the rays, the first rays of the beginning of salvation. Ome'az hiskar v'hayeshua kerefayim. And from that moment on, salvation began to occur. L'lamdena, to teach us, sherak al yidei ha'simcha, it is only through simcha that we have the ability to go ahead and be saved from it. So what is the Be'er HaChaim saying? What does this mean? So first of all, understand what the Be'er HaChaim is saying is the following. He says, when a person is besimcha, you see, let's take this step back. When you're wearing sackcloth, ashes on your head, and sitting in the corner crying, how does the world look? Bleak and dark and sad. That the Be'er HaChaim is saying something very simple. When a person goes ahead and has the ability to try to generate a little bit of simcha, they see the world in a different way. When I try to always be besimcha, try to always be blanketed by happiness, so we'll discuss in just a moment what this means, it gives me a different perspective. When there is simcha, I have the ability to begin to perceive divine salvation. Where there's no simcha, where all there is sa'ar, then the world is dark, the world is black, the world is dreary, the world is morose. There's nothing good that's going to happen. I have to train myself to be able to see the salvation of God. And the only way to begin to see the sapling of salvation is if I have a disposition of simcha. Because if my disposition is sadness, if my disposition is the sky is falling, if my disposition is the world is so terrible, you will never see any divine salvation. Says Rechai, something amazing. Do you know when Mordechai, the first time that Mordechai really began to feel optimistic that things were going to turn around? This is amazing. When was the first time the Rechai posits? It was when he was forced to change out of the sackcloth, put on the royal garments. He was paraded around town. It was the first time he saw a glimmer of hope. If you look at number 10, let's just expound this just for a moment. But again, you have to understand, so what does this mean to always be besimcha? To always mean happiness. So what does it mean? Always a smile on my face? So sometimes you don't feel like smiling. In general, it is always good to walk around with a smile on your face. That's not just my advice that Chazal told us in Pirkei Avos. Having the Kabbal kol adam b'sever panim yafos. You should always be smiling. And the truth is, even if you don't feel like smiling, fake it. Because again, there's an amazing thing about faking smiling, which is enough, after enough time of faking it, you actually begin to feel it. Clinical tests have shown. So, but what does it mean to be simcha? Take a look at number 10. We actually did this piece of Rabbi Nachman a while ago, I think even last year, maybe even more recent than that. So this is one of the most famous statements of Rabbi Nachman, Reish Pei Beis, in the Kutei Maran. So Rabbi Nachman writes, he says, V'chein tzarech ha'adam limtso gam, I'm not going to do the whole thing, I just want to show you a piece. Ki zei yadua shetzarech ha'adam lizar miyot lihios besimcha tamid, right? Rabbi Nachman's famous statement. Mitzvah gedola lihios besimcha tamid. So, right, it's a great mitzvah to always be happy. So of course the Mesnagdim say, really Rabbi Nachman, what number is that? Right? Mitzvah gedola lihios besimcha tamid. Rabbi Nachman doesn't mean to say it's one of the 613. Rabbi Nachman says, because it doesn't need to be one of the 613. It's so obvious and intuitive, and it's the only way to be a healthy person. I, Rabbi Nachman, but how can I always be happy? There are difficulties in life. Look what he writes. He says, well, a person has to do everything in their power to drive away sadness. I'll tell you the rest outside. Rabbi Nachman says, do you know how you always be simcha? Because there is always something good in life. There's always something good. I'm not happy with the person I am. Okay. Even though I can do a lot of work on myself, there's got to be something good. Find what's good. You have difficult circumstances in life. Find the one thing that's good. Always find the one thing in good that's life. The one thing that's good in me. The one thing that's good in the other. The one thing that's good. And something amazing happens, by the way. If we condition ourselves to think this way, we quickly begin to realize that, wow, It's not just one thing. It's actually 2, 3, 5, 75. Now again, those good things do not take away the difficulties and the challenges. The difficulties and challenges are still there. It's just a question of how you choose to define your perspective on life. Will I define my perspective by the challenges? Will I define my perspective ultimately by the overwhelming difficulties? Or will I choose to define my life perspective through what is good in life? Rabbi Nachman says that's what it means. Mitzvah gidola lihios besimcha tamid. It's a mitzvah to always be happy. But how could I always be happy? Because there's always something good. There's always something good. And this is so exceptionally important. This influences the way we think as individuals and the way we think as a people. You know, we're in a very difficult matzav in Klal Yisrael now. A very difficult matzav. And to a certain degree, we're a little bit desensitized about it because it's been months and months and months of attacks in Eretz Yisrael. And again, there's not anything that happens throughout the world that doesn't impact Klal Yisrael in some way. When there was a terror attack in Istanbul, 3 Israelis killed, 3 Jews. And again, we feel for the pain of all of humanity, for the victims of the Brussels. It's a crazy world. But focusing on our people a little bit, you know, when we were just in Eretz Yisrael, literally, we were walking back from the Kotel, from Shacharis. We were 2 minutes away from a stabbing attack in Shaar Shechem. We're walking back, and we see helicopters and police cars and ambulances right there, a daily reality. And you know, some people make the terrible mistake. They act like the sky is falling. The sky's not falling. Klal Yisrael is wonderful. Things are great. Can they be better? They could always be better. They could always be better. But we have an Eretz Yisrael, which we didn't have for 2,000 years. Okay, it has its imperfections, that we all agree with, but it's still ours. Baruch Hashem, there's so much Talmud Torah. There's so much Chesed. There's so many beautiful things. Sometimes, when we encounter difficulties, we allow those difficulties to shape the entirety of our perspective. And Rabbi Nachman says, that's not the way the Jew works. That's what Esther Malka was saying. Mordechai, the response of the Jew to difficult times is not to curl up into a ball, wear sackcloth, and say, oy vavoy, what is going to happen? That's not what the Jew does. We daven. But we daven besimcha. Ribbono Shel Olam, thank you for everything you've given us. And if you've given us so much in life already, I have no doubt that you're going to continue to take care of us further. I have no doubt. I have a lot of challenges, but I have so many brachas. So the same way you've given me all of those brachos, I have absolutely no doubt that you're going to take care of my challenges as well. How, when, where, what? That remains to be determined. But that, says the Rebbe, that's mitzvah gedola lios besimcha tamid. It doesn't mean pretend like you don't have problems. It doesn't mean ignore your challenges. It means focus on the fact that your life is not all challenges. And it doesn't matter, even if you're Eov, your life is not all challenges. There's always some good. There's always something positive. There's always something beautiful. And Esther HaMalka teaches us that even in the midst of trying times, focus on the good. Even in the midst of trying times, put on the nice clothing and maintain the proper perspective in life. Look at number 11. So this, I have to tell you, is a life-altering piece. This is from the Eish Kodesh. This is from the Rebbe of Piazhetzna. So Rav Klonimus Kalma Shapira was a Hasidic Rebbe. The Rebbe of Piazhetzna was a town in Poland. And he was in the Warsaw Ghetto. And every Shabbos, when he was able to, they had a minyan, and he used to give a drasha on Shabbos. And his drasha, I've mentioned this before, his drasha, somebody wrote down the drashas, buried them in a milk can in the ghetto. The Rebbe himself died on the train, on the cattle car to Auschwitz. And after the war, someone dug it up. I don't know who found it, how they found it, but they dug it up, and they put it into a sefer called Ish Kodesh, Holy Fire. And look what the Rebbe writes. This is from the Rebbe's drasha on Purim. Okay, get ready. The Rebbe writes, Shekedushas Yom Kippurim Dome Likedusha Sheyesh B'cho Eis U'b'cho Matzov. He says, Tehishvu Ahadadi Kibyom Kippurim, I'm sorry, I read that wrong. Shekedushas Yom Kippurim Dome Likedusha Sheyesh B'Purim. The Kedusha of Yom Kippur is like the Kedusha of Purim, holiness of Purim. What does that mean? Veniru, Tehishvu Ahadadi Kibyom Kippurim Chayiv Kol Echad Mi Yisrael His Anos V'Latzom B'cho Eis U'b'cho Matzov. So what's the halach on Yom Kippur? The halach on Yom Kippur is that you have to fast. And you have to fast no matter what. Meaning the only time you're permitted to break your fast on Yom Kippur is when? Is if, God forbid, it's what calls sakaras nafashos. Right? A potential danger to life. Then, so you have to fast at all costs, only not a danger to your life. Look what he writes. And even then, if you have to eat, you eat what you need to sustain yourself. V'lismoach b'yom ha-purim ad kedei mesiras nefesh. Hear what the Piyajetzna writes? You know what the link between Purim and Yom Kippur says, the Piyajetzna? That the same way you have to give everything to fast, everything up to your life to fast on Yom Kippur, says the Piyajetzna, you have to give everything on Purim to be besimcha. You have to do whatever you need to do in order to find Simcha on Purim. Now again, you understand, this is being said, Purim 1942, in the Warsaw Ghetto. So just so you understand, by this point in time, the people who he's speaking to, there are no more children in the ghetto. Children are gone from the ghetto. Everyone, right? Families are broken apart. These are a broken people that at this point in time already know that the probability that they're going to make it out alive is practically non-existent. And the Rebbe tells them, I got it. I'm with you. We're all in the same exact situation here. But there's a mitzvah on Purim to be besimcha, because there's something good here also. What's good? Jews are sitting here learning Torah together in the midst of this Gehenna. Jews are serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the midst of the most unspeakable circumstances. They conquered our bodies, they've taken our families, but they cannot conquer our soul. Is that not something positive in and of itself? Does it dry our tears? Does it take away our pain? Of course not. But it's still something to be besimcha about, says the Rebbe. That's the connection between Purim and Yom Kippur. The same way that you have to give everything to fast on Yom Kippur, you have to give everything to be besimcha on Purim. Look at number 12. The Shulchan Aruch, just because of time, we're not going to go through the whole thing over here. But the Shulchan Aruch writes over here, he says, speaking about, like in this year, he had a leap year. So there's an interesting discussion about what do you do with the 14th and 15th of Adar on Adar Rishon, on the first Adar, because we celebrate Purim, of course, in the second Adar. So is there a mitzvah to celebrate on the 14th and 15th of Adar Rishon? We call Purim Katan. So there's a machlokes, discussion halacha, but look how the Shulchan Aruch says at the end. He says, look at the last line, number 12, V'tov lev mishteh tamid. The Ramos says, or Moshe Slo says, the truth is, this dispute doesn't really weigh so much on my mind. You know why? Because it's always good to be besimcha. Because it's always good to celebrate. It's good to celebrate in Adar Rishon. It's good to celebrate in Adar Sheni. It's good to celebrate in Cheshvan. And it's good to celebrate in Nisan. And it's even good to celebrate in Av. And it's good to celebrate in Elul. Tov lev mishteh tamid. Because ultimately, the avoda of a Jew, like Rabbi Nachman says, is mitzvah gedola lihios besimcha. One of the everlasting lessons that Esther Hamalka gives us is, we cannot define our outlook on life by what's wrong. We have to define our outlook on life by all the beautiful things that are going right, by all the beautiful things we have as individuals and as a nation. It doesn't mean ignore your problems, it doesn't mean ignore the challenges, but what are you going to allow to define the essence and the framework of your life? Mordechai wants to wear sackcloth. Esther Malka says, that's not how we do it. And the Ribono Shel Olam, in his nuanced way, shows Mordechai, and by extension shows all of us, that Mordechai was wrong, Esther was right. And in fact, take a look at number 13. Now we'll complete the tie-in. So the Gemara Maseches Tainis says, out of Shimon Gamliel, Lo hayu yomim tovim li Yisrael. The Gemara goes through a list of days that were the happiest days for Klal Yisrael. What was the happiest day on the Jewish calendar? Yom HaKippurim. Why is Yom Kippur such a happy day? Mishum de isle is be slicha umechila. Because it's a day of forgiveness. Yom shenitnu bo luchos achronos, the day in which we received the second set of tablets. And now we understand the Zohar. What's the connection between Purim and Yom HaKippurim? What's the connection between these 2 days? They're days of incredible simcha. Yom Kippur is a day of simcha because it's a day of forgiveness, a day of relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Purim is a day of simcha. Why? Because Purim is the day that we find the courage to define our life perspective, not by what's broken, wrong, and damaged. But Purim is the day that we find the courage to define our life perspective by what's right, what's beautiful, and what's good. So if you bring this all together, we now hopefully enter into Purim with a renewed understanding. The Zohar telling us that the power of this day, the power of this Yom Tov, is derived literally from the holiest day of the Jewish calendar on Yom Kippur. And even though we started out by saying an hour ago that if we were to think about two of the most dissimilar days on the Jewish calendar, it would be Purim and Yom Kippur, we realized that in fact, they're so beautifully linked. Because both of these days contain two magnificent factors. Number one, if Yom Kippur is a day of selfless devotion to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then Purim is the day of selfless devotion to one another. We give Mishloach Manos not because you need my food and I need your food, but because I want to give something of myself to you, and you want to give something of yourself to me. We give Matanos Lev Yonim not simply because tzedakah, because I have a gishti of tzedakah every single day, but because if there's a way that I could help another, I want to. And that's why I didn't mention it before. You know, Rav Yeruchim Levavit Zecher Tzadik Levracha, the Mir Mashkiach, said something beautiful. He quoted the idea that on Mishloach Manos, I mention this every year in shul. I think my kila is tired of hearing it, but I say it anyway. That, you know, the most important thing of Mishloach Manos is to give to people, not who are your friends. Your friends know you like them. And the truth is, your friends are going to love you no less, even if they don't get 27 packages of cookies from you. But you know who you can give your Mishloach Manos to? You can give Mishloach Manos to people who are not as socially connected. Because there are a lot of people, you know, everybody likes to gripe about the pile of Mishloach Manos on their counter at the end of Purim. Not everybody has that. Not everybody has that. Not everybody goes out on Purim and comes back and finds packages by their door. There are people who aren't socially connected. Think about one, two, or three of those kinds of people. You don't say, hi, I'm bringing you Mishloach Manos because I heard you're not socially connected. But what a beautiful opportunity for selflessness. You know what? The truth is, I don't know if we're going to be friends or we're not going to be friends, but we're part of the same nation, and I want you to feel connected, and I want you to feel that you have a chilek. And I know sometimes maybe you live a little bit on the periphery, but I want you to know you have a place in my heart. Even if I don't even know who you are, you have a place in my heart. The Rav Yeruchim goes further. He says, with people with whom we've had machlokes, sometimes we don't have the best relationships with people for a variety of different reasons. Purim is a beautiful day to reach out. It's a beautiful day to reach out. In fact, again, Chazal say that one of the reasons we drink on Purim is to allow us to fix relationships. Because again, if everybody's sober, it's hard to go ahead and fix relationships. When people are drunk, so everybody's hugging each other. It's much easier to make shalom. So the idea over here is to reach out. Mishloach Manos, so number one message, selflessness. If Yom Kippur is the day of selfless devotion to God, Purim is the day of selfless devotion to one another. That's our avoda. To become a little bit more like Esther, to become a little bit more like Mordechai, to stop, to not live a life where I only focus on what's good for me or what's good for my nuclear family, but to live a life of where my real focus is, what can I do for my nation? What could I do for my people? And lesson number two, avodah number two in the Yom Tov of Purim, is mitzvah gedola lios besimcha tamid. Life is filled with challenges. Life is filled with challenges as individuals. Life is filled with challenges as a nation. And we have a choice in life. And it's a Mordechai Esther choice. I could choose to just simply cry, put on the sackcloth, put on the ashes, and say, woe is me and woe is my people for all the difficulties. You could do that. It doesn't get you very far, but you can do it. But you could do it. Or you could adopt the approach of Esther Hamalka. Take off the sackcloth, right? Kumi Ori, take off the sackcloth. Put on the clothing. See the good things in life. Yes, find the courage, find the perspective to tackle the challenges. But don't define your life as an individual. Don't define your life as a nation by what's wrong. But find the courage to look through the lens of everything that's beautiful, everything that's good, everything that's right. And we should hope that in the merit of Mir Tzah Hashem, of having a meaningful Purim, because sometimes we lose a little bit of sight of the message of Purim in the jocular nature of the day. And it is. It's supposed to be a day of levity and a day of beautiful simcha. But it's important that we put our minds to really maximizing the avodah. We should be zochei Meir Tzah Hashem over the course of this Yom Tov to become more selfless people. We should be zochei Meir Tzah Hashem to have people who find the perspective of simcha and the zechus of learning from our beautiful role models like an Esther Hamalka, Mordechai HaTzadik. Kodesh Baruch Hu should once again provide us with the Yeshua, once again with the salvation. But not a Yeshua of Purim. We've had so many salvations like Purim where our Kodesh Baruch Hu is behind the scenes, and it's cloaked in Teva, it's cloaked in nature, and the zechus of internalizing the message of this beautiful Yom Tov, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should see fit to give us a true geula, right? An explicit geula, a miraculous geula, and halavai we should be zocha, and the merit of becoming better people over the next day. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should finally see fit to release the Mashiach. We should be zocha, Mir Tzah Hashem, to be able to go back to Eretz Yisrael together, to be in a rebuilt Yerushalayim together, to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a unified rebuilt Beis HaMikdash together. Mir Rabbi Amin. Amen.
That was terrific.